אבל ויקס פורשניס פרשת תולדות. Okay, it's on page 125. 124 in Hebrew, 125. The subject of this week's portion are Yaakov and Esav, the two brothers that were born to Yitzhak and Rivka, and their interactions with their parents as well. But the main focus is Yaakov and Esav. In this week's portion, we hear about the fact that Yaakov and Esav are separated from each other by the fact that Yaakov will be the only one to build a Jewish nation, while Esav will not. Up till this point, it was not yet definite, but in our week's portion, we learn about the fact that it became a matter of fact. Esav is outside of the framework of the Jewish people. It's Yaakov who will establish the Jewish people. Now, when we mention the names Yaakov and Esav, what comes to mind right away is that Yaakov was a very righteous person, in fact, a perfect human being, a human being the way, or a Jew, the way Hashem wanted him to be, while Esav is the exact opposite. So he's a wicked person, very wicked, and because they are so different than each other, obviously they can't, it's very hard for Esav to tolerate Yaakov and his way of life. It's very hard for Esav to tolerate the way of life of Yaakov. It awakens his conscience and he hates Yaakov. Especially because of the fact that Yaakov got the blessings of Yitzchak, as we all know, and we'll dwell a little bit on a little later. So Esav is not just very different than Yaakov, but he is a nation that we suffer from till today. So we want to understand the dynamics between Yaakov and Esav, who they were, what are they all about? And the Torah gives us descriptions. If you go to page 125, so the first thing that we hear is that when Rivka is pregnant, if you look at verse number 22, the children agitated within her. And we all know the famous Midrash, that when she passed through places of learning Torah, Yaakov wanted to come out. When she passed through places of idol worship, Esav wanted. And our sages discussed the opposites that were already clear at the womb of Rivka. They were not at peace with each other already at the womb of Rivka. And then the Torah tells us that, describes us who the two of them are. So the Torah tells us in the next page, verse number 27, the Letz grew up, and Esav became one who knows hunting, a man of the field, but Yaakov was a wholesome man, abiding in tents. From the word that connects the two sentences in this pasuk, we already know that there are two opposites. Because after describing Esav as a hunter, a person knows hunting, the Torah says, but, meaning now will come something that is very different, the opposite. Yaakov is a person that sits in the tents and learns Torah. So at a young age, it's already known and clear that they are very different from each other. Let's see how the Torah discusses Esav. Obviously, he occupied himself with hunting. But the way the Torah says it is the following. Back to verse number 26, right? Esav was a person who knew hunting. Esav became one who knows hunting, meaning he was an expert in the field. This really defined him. He was an expert in the field, while Yaakov was the person of the tent. Now, the Torah has a translation to Aramaic written by Onkelos. We are told that originally Ezra, who was the leader of the generation who came back to Israel after the exile in Babylon, translated the Torah to Aramaic, but it was forgotten over time. And Onkelos, who lived at the time of the Roman, he translated the Torah again. And I want to say a little bit about Onkelos before I say what he says here, because it will explain to us why it's very, very essential to know it in a connection to his background. Onkelos was a convert. He was at the time of Adrianus, the Roman king, the one who destroyed the city of Beitar after the destruction of the Second Temple. He killed the 10 righteous people, among them Rabbi Akiva, the 10 people that we call Aseret Harugei Malchut. He was a very wicked king who did a lot of harm to the Jewish nation. Onkelos was a relative of his. Adrianus was his uncle. He was a nephew to Adrianus the king. And somehow, Onkelos got to learn Torah. He did it in a hidden way, because obviously this would have not been tolerated in the Roman Empire. But he really reached a nice level of knowledge of Torah. And at a certain point, he desired very, very much to convert and become Jewish. He approached his uncle, Adrianus, the king, Adrian, right, the king, and he told him that he wants to start doing something. So the king told him, you don't have to do anything. My treasure house is yours and you can have whatever your heart wishes. But he said, I want to accomplish something. I want to go into a business. And he asked Adrian for advice. So he told him, see some, if there is something that is cheap at the moment and people don't appreciate, but it has value. At a certain point, you'll sell it and you'll make a lot of money. Adrian, this was his advice. Onkelos accepted it and somehow ended it in Jerusalem, where he thought he can become Jewish, right? And became Jewish, converted. This angered Adrian very, very much. So he sent messengers to him 3 times. With a commandment to bring them back to Rome, he in cuffs, he wanted to punish him. How does he do something like this? And each time that the delegation came, Onkelos said something very fascinating about Judaism to the delegation that came to take him to Rome, and he convinced them, and they converted too over time. So 3 delegations, right, that were told, the second and the third, don't talk to him altogether, right? Just bring him, right? Still, somehow, he caused them to ask him a question, and they converted. Eventually, Adrian was able to bring him back to Rome. And he told him, what are you doing? So he said, I followed your advice. You told me to buy something that is not appreciated, but has value. And then, I'll make a lot of money, I'll gain a lot from it. So Judaism is something that nobody appreciates, but it's very, very valuable. So I converted to Judaism. And Adrian had to accept. Okay. So he wrote a translation to Aramaic of the Torah. And I want you to see what he says in this week's portion on Ish Yodea Tzayid, one who knows hunting. Before we go to what Onkelos says, if we look at the description of Esav and Yaakov, what did Yaakov do? He sat in a tent and studied. Esav was the person of the big world, of what we would be called today the real world. Right? He was hunting, he was doing, he was accomplishing, he was able to overcome wild animals, and so on. He was the person of action. Now let's see how Onkelos translates the word. And we have to know that Onkelos tries very hardly in his translation to remain loyal to the plain meaning. If he doesn't translate literally, there is a good reason. And here, the translation of person who knows hunting is not a person who knows hunting. He says, a person who knows hunting, he says, what will be the parallel in Hebrew of a batlan. Bet tet lamed nun, batlan. A batlan is a person who is good, is good for nothing. What happened? I don't know. Okay. Everything he does is not successful. He's not contributing anything. People look at him as a nebuch, somebody who's miserable, right? Incapable, not successful, not accomplishing. And that's very bewildering. A staff is not accomplished. Is a person who goes and does and conquers and, you know, get a lot. What does Yaakov do? Sit at the tent and learns. But obviously, Onkelos wants to open up our eyes to who accomplishes. If we look on a physical level, Esav accomplishes a lot. When the children of Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, we say in the Haggadah of Pesach, for 210 years of great suffering. I don't know what happens with my computer today. Every so often, this happens. Maybe this will
happen. It seems to be fine, Mrs. Khan.
What did you say?
I think it's fine.
Yeah, okay. So each time that, so he says that Onkelos is the one who doesn't come, sorry, that Esav is the one who doesn't accomplish anything and Yaakov is the one to accomplish. So obviously we have to redefine what accomplishment is. And based on Onkelos, we have to say the following. Accomplishment will be defined or will be identified, but by what remains and influences forever, in the present and forever. It seems that at least at the lifetime of Yaakov and Esav, Esav influenced the world more, right? He was very wealthy, he got it. A country of Seir without any difficulty, as I said before, while the Jewish people went down to Egypt for many years of suffering. But let me ask ourselves, would we know about Esav, or would anybody know about Esav today, if not of the fact that in the Torah of Yaakov it is mentioned? He would have been nobody today. Nobody would have known that there was a person like this. What about Yaakov? Yaakov is alive till today. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. In the merit of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we exist till today. Our ability to serve Hashem is a result of the fact that they paved the path, and so on, and so on, and so on. So if we look from the point of view of what is real accomplishment, meaning what really influences and what really creates. We have to say that while Yaakov was sitting in his room, studying Torah day and night, he changed the world and affected it for eternity. And of course, he affected his own world. He is up in Shamayim in a place that is beyond. Right? But even if you speak about mankind as a whole, his influence is a tremendous influence. By Esav, who is he today? Nothing. Right? But let's go further with it. It's not only that today we don't know about Esav, unless it would have been written in the Torah. But what Esav was, even at the time that he was alive. But the nations that came out of Esav, Rome, Amalek, right? What they are is basically not what we think they are. And I want to quote a story from the Gemara, fascinating story, that will clarify it for us. It's a very, very fascinating story. And the story is the following. It's in the Midrash, in Bamidbar Rabbah 21:20, if you want to look it up. So the Midrash says, no, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place. Okay, it's in Tanchuma, Midrash Tanchuma, Parashat Vayeshev 3. So the story tells us that Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi lived after the destruction of the Second Temple. So his son Shimon, the Rabbi Chiya, walked in the market. So it's Rabbi Shimon who is the son of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and Rabbi Chiya was the student of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. It's the son and the student of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi who walked together in the market. And they saw a Roman soldier, it was the time of the Romans, a Roman soldier that was looked very healthy, very big, very powerful. So Rabbi Shimon said to Rabbi Chiya, "See how fat and strong are the calves of Esav, like Egel, like the children of the cow, right? Like the Egel of Esav." And he uses for fat the term that is used when we feed cows in order to make them fat, right? Come up to min, meaning how much food was given to them, how strong they are, how powerful they are. So Rabbi Chiya took Rabbi Shimon as a response to his comment to a vineyard that had grapes and figs. And on the fruits, there were flies that were, you know, running around, right? And he told him, "These flies and the armies of the Romans are equal." Meaning, what is a fly? When we want to say something is doesn't have any strength, we say it's weak like a fly, right? So he told him the Romans and these flies are equal. So when they separated, Rabbi Shimon went home. And he told his father, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, what his student, Rabbi Chiya, said. So Rabbi said, "That's how much Rabbi Chiya valued the soldiers like flies?" He said, "That's how he appreciates a Roman soldier." And Rabbi explains, he says, "These armies of Esav have no value. They are nothing, nothing, not flies." And he continues, "But the flies, Hashem created them, and via them, he accomplishes things in this world. They are his messengers." Meaning, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said, Rabbi Chiya gave them too much value when he compared them to flies. Because flies are creatures of Hashem who do his will and accomplish something in this world. What does Rome accomplish? Nothing. But still, if you look around, they build, they conquer, they accumulate richness. How do they are powerful? They cause a lot of damage to other people. How could we say that they are really nothing, zero? Okay, so I want to direct you to a pasuk in our week's portion later on, when Esav comes to Yitzhak, and Yitzhak tells him, "I want to bless you, send him away to bring food." And meanwhile, Yaakov comes in dressed like Esav and pretending that he is Esav, and Yitzhak is suspicious, so he tells him, "Come close, I want to touch you. I want to see if you, in other words, I want to see if you are Esav." Right? So he says, Too far already, just a minute. Okay, it's on page 139. No, it's before, it's 137. Okay, if you look at 21. Okay, so Yitzhak says, and Yitzhak said to Jacob, come close, if you please, so I can feel you, my son. Are you indeed my son Esav or not? So Yaakov says, yes, I'm your son Esav. And then in verse number 24, no, in 23, Yitzhak says the following, but he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy, but the hands are Esav's hands. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. But his hands are like Esav's, his brother. So he blessed him. Okay. So in Hebrew, it's a kol kol Yaakov. It's a very famous statement. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. And the hands are the hands of Esav. Okay? And our sages say it refers to the voice of Yaakov, the voice of learning, the voice of praying. And they say, when Yaakov learns, when his voice of learning and praying is heard, then the hands of Esav are weak. When he prays strongly, I'm sorry, when he is weak in his learning, then the hands of Esav are strong. So what does it indicate to us? What is the source of the strength of Esav? The spiritual weakness of Yaakov. So Esav doesn't even have his own strength, right? If Esav is powerful, if Esav causes us problems, it's not because intrinsically he is strong, powerful, and capable, and he is accomplished. His strengths come from us. And the Gaon of Vilna shows us in the Hebrew something very beautiful. If you look at page 136 in the Hebrew, verse number 22, where it's written, Hakol kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, Vehayadaim yadei Esav, and the hands are the hands of Esav. So if you look, Hakol kol Yaakov, the word kol, voice, is written twice. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. But one time it's written without a vav, and one time it's written with a vav. And this shows us that sometimes the call, the voice, can be kal, light. It's not powerful. The learning by Yaakov is not strong enough. Then the hands of Esav will be very strong. But if the call is vivav, powerful, full voice in learning and prayer, then the hands of Esav are basically very weak. So in other words, what we understand is that it's no wonder that Onkelos says that Esav was a batlan, good for nothing. Because at the end of a lifetime, what remains is zero. When the balance is zero, it doesn't matter how much you worked all along. It's zero. It has no impact, not in your lifetime and not after your lifetime. Because the source of strength in this world is what Yaakov does. And that's why there is a pasuk in Yeshayahu that says the following. Just a moment. Okay. I'll find it soon, but there is a pasuk in Yeshayahu that defines Yaakov as a builder, as the one who creates, while Esav is a good for nothing, because at the end, the balance is zero. Now, in our week's portion, we see who Esav is via two stories, and we'll see that it's a very complex person. It's not so simple. He's just wicked and the opposite of Yaakov. And eventually, Amalek, who comes from him, will be wiped out, his memory will be erased. It's a very complex situation. So let's start with the story of selling the rights of being firstborn. Okay, so it's the beginning of the parasha. Going back to 125, after describing the birth, we are going to 127. And we are in verse 29. It's a very famous story. I'll go quickly through the facts just to create a context, and then we'll go into the inner meaning. Okay, so Jacob simmered the stew. And we all know it was the day that Abraham passed away. And when a person passes away, we eat round things to show that the world is like a circle, right? Born, going up, and then going back down, and going to the world to come, right? So Yaakov simmers the stew, and Asaf came in from the field, and our sages tell us he on this day did a few things that the Torah's punishment for is to be karet, to be cut off, right? And he was exhausted. Esav said to Jacob, pour into me now some of the very red stuff, for I am exhausted. Okay, so Esav came exhausted. And he doesn't even see what's in the pot. All he sees is that it's red. He doesn't define it, right? Now he knows it's the day of the death of Abraham. Most probably he knows why this red stuff, right, is cooked, right? But lentils, right, red lentils. But he doesn't even define the name of what's in the pot. And it tells him, pour it into my mouth. Don't just give it to me and I'll eat. Pour it into my mouth. I'm totally exhausted. And he's therefore called his name Edom. Comes from red. Adom is red. Esav is called Edom. Now, if I would have been told, give a name to Esav based on all that I know about him, I would definitely not call him Edom. I wouldn't think that the detail of not saying, give me lentils, but give me this red thing, right? Define who Esav is. But obviously, if the Torah calls him like this, it defines who he is. When a person is so immersed in physicality that he comes so tired on a day that his grandfather passed away, and he's so hungry that all that he's asked for is, give me the red thing, he obviously defines who he is. And Yaakov gives him on the account that he'll sell him the rights of being firstborn. Because to be firstborn means to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. And could a person like this serve Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash? So Yaakov did not do it because he wanted it. He wanted that it won't be in the hands of Esav. Okay? Okay. We can say, don't judge. Esav came from the field. He was so exhausted. Sometimes we are so exhausted that we can't really see. Okay. But then the Torah adds, if you go further, Esav said, look, I'm going to die. So of what use to me is a birthright? Okay. So he suggests to buy it from him. And at the end of 34, Esav spawned the birthright. This changes the picture. If when you are very hungry, you call food red instead of identifying what it is and relating to the death of Abraham, okay. But you ate already. You're satisfied. You relaxed a little bit. You should feel bad now that you sold something that is very valuable, right? For what? For a cup of soup? But no, he was happy with the sale. Our sages say that he said the following. Okay. He gathered groups of people and he said to them, "Do you know what I did to this one?" He didn't even call him Yaakov, because obviously he referred to Yaakov as the Batlan, as the good for nothing, right? What did he do all day? Was sitting and studying Torah, right? "I ate his lentils," he continued saying, "I drank his wine, and I tricked him, and I sold him the rights of being firstborn." So why does he look at it as a trick? Because the rights of being firstborn are spiritual rights. And he got something tangible. So he feels he did a good deal. He made a good deal. Now, this is a very, say, extreme picture of somebody who is really totally physical. And hearing just this, the way we explained it, we would say that Esav is a bum. Right? Really, a person without any values, nothing. But if you go to the other story, okay, the story of selling of the blessings. Yitzchak is giving the blessings to Yaakov instead of to Esav. And after Yaakov leaves the room, Esav comes in and he discovers that Yaakov took the blessings. Okay, so what's his reaction? Let's go to page 141. No, I'm sorry, 139. Okay, so after Yitzchak blessed Yaakov, Esav came in, as we said, right? And then Esav discovers that the blessings were taken away from him. So he tells his father, "My brother tricked me twice. Once when he took my rights of being firstborn, and a second time now by taking my blessings." When Yitzchak heard that Esav sold the rights of being firstborn, he understood that now Yaakov is the firstborn. So he said he should really be blessed. Why? Originally, Yitzchak thought that by helping Esav a little bit, he will be able to join Yaakov in creating the Jewish nation. And this would have been the ideal scenario. Even though Esav had difficult character traits, and Yaakov had much more refined character traits at birth. But both of them could fulfill a mission. If Esav would have overcome his character traits, he would have been able to create a relationship with Yaakov of Yisachar and Zvulun. While Yaakov will be like Yisachar, sitting and learning all the time, and Esav will work and provide for Yaakov. So it's very important to be a Zvulun, right? Enable people to study Torah. And together they would have built the Jewish nation, each one having six tribes. But Esav made wrong choices. So it became clear from the fact that he sold the rights of firstborn that he's not suitable for it. If he will have a lot of money, he will not support Yaakov. He'll continue to fight him because he doesn't appreciate who Yaakov is, right? So what is the reaction of Esav? 34, after his father said that Yaakov should really be blessed, even though he didn't know it was Yaakov and he blessed him. But now that he knows and he sees who Esav is, he says, let him be blessed. But then it says, when Esav heard his father's words, he cried out an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me too, father. Now, what does this pasuk teach us about Esav? If Esav is really the person that has no appreciation of spirituality, totally physical, a real person that is the person of this world and doesn't have any values of Abraham, Yitzhak, Sarah, Rivka, Nothing. Why would he care about the blessings of Yitzhak? In order to care about the blessings of Yitzhak, one has to believe in Hashem. One has to believe that the righteous people have a say by Hashem and that his father is righteous. And if he misses the blessing, that's horrible. Because that's his only way to succeed in life. And the term used for his reaction is Vayizak ze'aka gdola umara. He cried, he screamed a very bitter, great scream. And it's the same language that is written in Megillat Esther, referring to Mordechai after he heard about the decree of Haman. And our sages create a connection. Like every two places or more places in the Tanakh that use the same language, heaven is an inner connection. And they tell us that the fact that the Jewish people came to a place of crying so bitterly at the time of Haman was a consequence of the fact that why Avot Yaakov did Esav screamed, and even though Yaakov did the right thing, but still this scream had an effect. So obviously, it was a real, real bitter scream, what indicates great faith. So who is Esav? Let's add to it another component. The way Esav honored parents, nobody else did ever. Our sages tell us, whenever he came to his father, he changed clothes and wore the clothing of first men that Hashem made for him, that went down generation to generation, and were now by Esav, because he killed Nimrod, and Nimrod had them. So Esav had this special clothing that Hashem made, and each time that he came in front of his father to talk to him, to serve him, to do something for him, he changed his clothing as a respect for his father. Later on, the Torah tells us, even though he hated Yaakov as a result of what took place here, he said, I'll wait till my father dies, and then I'll kill Yaakov. Because as horrible as he felt towards Yaakov, he respected his father, and he would not cause him pain. He would not kill Yaakov when he is alive. So we see sensitivity. We see faith, great faith. So how does it go with selling the rights of being firstborn, right? Of violating laws in the Torah that the punishment for them is karet? Our sages tell us on this day of the death of Abraham, Esav killed and committed adultery. So how does it go together? What's going on here? I want to show something else here that will help us in the story of the selling of the birthrights, that will help us to answer this question. What happened? How is it that Esav, who grew up by Abraham, Yitzhak, Rivka, Sarah, ended up in this way? Obviously, the same way that Yitzhak taught Yaakov, he taught Esav. The same education that Rivka gave to Yaakov, she gave to Esav. What happened here? Okay, so I want to show you something else. Very interesting. When he wanted to get the soup, right? And Yaakov told him, okay, no problem. Sell me the rights of being firstborn and I'll give it to you. What's the reaction of Esav? Let's go further, again to the pasuk, right? 32. 32, page 127. Okay? And Esav said, look, I'm going to die. So of what use to me is a birthright? Going to die. So why do I need it? Okay. What's the meaning? Esav is a young man. Esav is a young man. Why does he say, I'm going to die? Right? So Rashi explains that Esav said, if I would be a priest, if I would do the service in the temple, as was meant initially, that the firstborn will do the service in the temple, I'll for sure die. Meaning there are so many laws that one has to be careful with while doing the service in the temple. It's like being in the palace. You have to be very careful how you behave when you're in front of the king. I will for sure die. So why do I need it? I can't handle it. That's Rashi's explanation. That's the simple explanation. Reb Eli Lapian, who was the one in charge of the spiritual growth in the yeshiva of Be'er Yaakov here in Israel, my brother-in-law was in the yeshiva while he was still there, was a great, great person. There is a famous story about him that he once came to the Sfat Emet and asked for a blessing. The Sfat Emet was one of the Gerer Rebbes at the time, right? It's over 100 years ago, way over 100 years ago. And he asked for a blessing. So the Sfat Emet told him, a person that Eliyahu revealed himself to doesn't need my blessing. Obviously, the Sfat Emet knew about it. Only Reb Eli Lapian knew about it. He never told it to anybody, but obviously it was a fact. And the Sfat Emet was able, in his spiritual vision, to know about it. So Reb Eli Lapian answered, if the Rebbe knows that Eliyahu appeared to me, I really want a blessing from him. Okay, cute story, but it shows us, right, who Reb Eli Lapian was. So he says something very beautiful here. He says as follows. We all have a bad inclination, and the bad inclination is very powerful. It has three parts to it. It's a combination of three things that entice us to do negative things, and it's very powerful. One is negative character traits that we are born with. We all are born with some positive character traits and some not so positive. Now, we cannot say positive, not positive, but some that it's easier to channel to do good with, and some that it's very hard to channel for the good. Like Esav was born with a tendency, with an urge to kill, to shed blood. That's not easy to deal with, right? So that's one aspect of our bad inclination, things that we are born with. We are not responsible for the fact that we have these character traits, but it's very hard to overcome them because it's our nature. Second one are influences that we have from the outside, our environment, other people who influence us, things we see that are out there, and so on and so on. All external things. That's the Yetzer Hara that is chitzoni, that is external. But we have also a spiritual power inside us that is the bad inclination. And it's basically an angel, a spiritual power. And angels are not limited. And that's why our sages say that we must have godly help in order to overcome the bad inclination. Without it, it's impossible. And they give us advice. What will help us overcome these triple aspects of bad inclination? The first one they say, study Torah. Right? The more we study, the more we understand, the more we see the beauty of Torah, the more we connect via Torah to Hashem, the easier it is to overcome the bad inclination. The second one, if this doesn't help, our sages say, accept upon yourself the yoke of Hashem. Say Shema Yisrael. Tell yourself, I'm a servant of Hashem. I accept to do whatever He says. I'm putting aside my will and I follow the will of Hashem. That's the second method. And if this doesn't help either, remind yourself that we are not here forever. Remind Him of the day of death when we pass to another world. And our reality there will be defined by what we did here. And life here is very short. The reality after death is eternal. Obviously, we will be encouraged by hearing it, right? By telling it to ourselves to do the right thing. But here's something very interesting happens. This seems to be the last resort, the strongest thing that can help us. And interestingly enough, when Esav senses a spiritual potential, what does he say? I don't need it because I'm going to die. This just said that remembering the day of death should bring us closer to Hashem, to value every moment where we can invest in spirituality because we create our next world reality. And here, this very same thing, I'm going to die, causes a salve to sell the right of being firstborn. How do we understand the two? So Rebbe Lalapyan explains the following. He says, there is another pasuk. There is a pasuk that tells us that there are people who say, let us eat and drink meat and drink wine. Why? And they say, achol veshato, let us eat and drink, because tomorrow we'll die. Meaning, reminding myself of death is not a magic thing. You just say, oh, one day I'll die, and that inclination disappears. It's introducing a way of thought. And this very thought that death is at the end of the road does one thing for us. It tells me my time here is limited. So now it depends who I am. If my life is dedicated to physicality, I'll say, oh, I don't have much left. Let me eat, drink, do whatever I can to enjoy physically. If my life is dedicated to the service of Hashem, and I know that I won't be here forever, and I define now what will be with me later, I will say a waste of time, but I'll dedicate myself to spirituality. Now, the question about Esav is, Esav knew it all. He got it, A, from knowing Torah. We find that he came to Yitzchak with questions about how do you give maaser from straw and salt, meaning he knew Torah very well, and in principle, he wanted to be good. He wants even to do beyond the letter of the law, because we don't have to give maaser, not from salt and not from straw, right? So he knows it all. So what's happening? He has Torah, right? So he sees in front of him, externally, the best. We said the second part of the bad inclination is the environment. He's in the best environment possible. Yitzchak and Rivka are his parents. Abraham is alive. He is quite, capable of realizing who Abraham is. So what's taking place here? And the key is character traits. If a person does not refine his character traits, he will be blinded by his desires, and there will be no way that he will judge in the proper way. The same way that if a judge gets bribery, it's impossible that he will be impartial. We are all judges. We have two voices in us. If we have strong desires for physicality, we want something very, very much. We won't even hear the other voice. So the problem of Esav was that he was born with very difficult character traits. But being born with very difficult character traits doesn't mean you are doomed. Each time that a person creates, I'm sorry, each time that a person makes a positive choice, he strengthens his good inclination. And the stronger the good inclination gets, it's possible to overcome the bad inclination. And that's very essential to understand. Yes, we do have an angel inside us, a spiritual power inside us that incites us to do negative things. But we start with a certain level of strength, of a pull towards negativity. And this is defined by Hashem, how much. But Hashem gives us the ability to overcome it. How? So we said the steps, but there is one more thing that I want to add. Each time that I think, study Torah, stop to think, and really pay attention to why I am here and accept upon myself the yoke of Hashem and do the right thing, even if it's after a difficult battle, I strengthen my good inclination and weakens my bad one. So the more I do it, the more I'm capable of overcoming the negativity and achieving greatness. It's to that extent that our sages tell us that if Esav would have been doing what he's supposed to do, if he would have fought very hard, and it would have not been easy, it would have been greater than Yaakov because he's challenged so much. But it didn't bother. How did the bad inclination make him not bother? It made him an expert of hunting, meaning work to exhaustion. He came home on this day, what did he say? I'm exhausted. I can't even take the spoon and put it in my mouth, pour it into my mouth. Meaning, the bad inclination ensures that we don't have a time to stop and think. And if we don't stop and think, we don't pay attention, when we run after physicality, we will never be satisfied. And we will never have the opportunity to stop and make a change. I want to show you, tell you three stories that our sages say, two that are hinted in our week's portion, and another one. One that shows how does it look when one runs totally after physicality and doesn't stop, and two that show us what happens when one stops. So the first story that the Talmud says is that a person made a party, a non-Jew made a party, and invited one of our sages to the party too. And he had to go for whatever reasons, right? Everything possible was served in this party. But there was one thing that was missing that obviously the person could not get. And it was a certain kind of nuts. In Hebrew, it's called a gozei perech, a certain kind of a nut that he could not get it. And while the party was going on, this person discovered that one thing he could not get. He got so angry that he turned the table upside down, broke everything, and was terribly angry. And our sage that was there at the party told him, "You have so much, so what if you don't have this?" And he could not calm him down. There was no way. And obviously, the Talmud tells us something very profound here. If a person is totally dedicated to physicality, he'll never be satisfied. Because we have a soul, and the soul is not satisfied. So no matter how much he'll have, he'll feel always that he needs more, needs more, needs more. Never be satisfied. So how will he stop to think? So the first thing that happened to Esav is that he was always on the run. And when you are always on the run of physicality, you can lose everything. I want to show you something very interesting in the story of the selling of the blessings that will lead us to two more stories that will complete the idea. Okay? When Yaakov came into Yitzhak to get the blessings of Esav, Right? We said Yitzhak was suspicious. So let's see what he told him. We read some of it, but I want to emphasize something different. Okay? So we are in page 137. Okay, so as we said, Yitzhak was suspicious. So in 26, Yitzhak, his father, told him, come close, if you please, and kiss me, my son. And obviously, he wanted to see, is it Esav? Isn't it Esav? So in 27, the next page, 139 on the top. So he drew close and kissed him. He smelled the fragrance of his garments and blessed him. Very interesting. Why would the Torah tell us that he smelled the fragrance of his garments? So Rashi explains, quotes our sages, that with Yaakov came the fragrance of Gan Eden. So he saw that there is here spiritual value, and that's why he blessed him. But our sages say something else. If you look at the Hebrew, clothes in Hebrew is bgadim. His clothes, bgadav. That's in the Hebrew, the top of 138. And our sages tell us, don't read bgadav. Read Bogdav's, Bogdav. Bogdav means his traders. Yitzhak saw the future. He was a great, very great person. He had Ruach HaKodesh. And he saw that in the future, people will come out of Yaakov who won't be people that with them comes the smell of Gan Eden. They will be very wicked people, traders. And our sages tell us, who did he see? Two particular people, and it's famous stories. One story is Yosef Meshita, that's his name. Yosef Meshita lived at the time of the temple, of the destruction of the temple. When the enemies came into the place of the temple, they wanted to come in, they were afraid. So they called Yosef Meshita and wanted him to enter first because they were afraid. They wanted a Jew to come in and see what happens. If he'll be killed, if he'll be punished, they were afraid. So they told him, go in, bring us the candelabra, something very valuable from the inside, and whatever you bring will be yours. Obviously, there were things that were made of pure gold in the Mishkan, in the temple. So it was appealing to Yosef Meshita. Imagine a Jew. What level is he on? To enter the Beit HaMikdash and give the enemies the menorah. And he did. When he came out, they told him, the menorah is not going to be yours because this is an article that is only to be used by royalty. This will be given to the king. But we promise you, go in another moment, bring something else, and this will be yours. The falsehood of these people who promised and did not fulfill the promise, even though he did something that was so awful and they didn't give him the reward, opened up his eyes. He had a moment of looking into things and said, I angered my God once, I'm not going to do it again. And they took a knife that carpenters use. They put him on a desk of a carpenter and saw his neck and killed him. And while it happened, he said, I deserve it because I angered Hashem. So this is what Yitzhak saw. One story. The second one was there was a one of the 10 great people that at this period of time were taken to death. So is was taken to death, right? The Romans carried a piece of wood, a beam that on it they wanted to hang him. And while he was walking towards it, towards his death, his nephew was a wicked person, and that the Romans appreciated and gave a very valuable horse for him to ride on, saw him, and he told him, "See where you are and see where I am." Like saying, "What's the use of all your righteousness?" Right? He was a wicked person. It was Shabbos, and he was riding on a horse, doing something that one should not do, but it was not his worst problem, right? So Yosef ben Yoezer, his uncle, answered, "If the people who anger him get such honor and wealth like you got, obviously those who serve him will get much more." Right. But, and he told him, "If I am punished in this way, obviously I was a righteous person, so it's a punishment for something very small. How much more so will you be punished?" When Yaakov ben Tzruya heard it, he had a moment where his eyes were open. He had a trigger for thinking, and he realized that his uncle is right. And he killed himself in a way that all four kinds of death that are done in Jewish court when a person deserves it were done to him at the same time. And Yosef ben Yoezer saw in vision his bed in Gan Eden. Now ascending to Gan Eden. And he said, in a moment, he preceded me in Gan Eden. So what do we see? If a person stops to think, studies Torah, accepts the yoke of Hashem, and overcomes the spiritual tendencies that are hard to overcome, he will get to be very righteous. Esav could have been even more than Yaakov if he would have done it. So Esav was a very complex person. He knew it all. His head was great. His head is buried in Ne'arat HaMachpelah, next to the Avot, to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. But being that his heart, his character traits, were not corrected and he didn't work on them, he ended up the way he did. I'll finish here and open for questions.
Before we open, I just want to make an announcement. This class is for Refuah Shleima, for Sima Nuta Bas Rivka, and Le'ilui Nishmas Me'ira Chaya Nechama Bracha Bas David Mordechai. We'll open up for questions. Okay, you should be able to unmute yourselves.
We thank the Rebbetzin very much.
Very welcome. Okay, so we let him in that session.
Don't we say that Jacob's head is, his body is in Manhattan? In the cave of the patriarch, but not his head, no?
The head, because he knew the truth. But his heart was not pure.
Okay. So his head is in the cave of the patriarch.
And it's just the head.
The head.
Yeah.
Rabbi Zinkon, can you just share, how did Yitzhak become blind?
How what?
How did Yitzhak become blind? When did that happen?
Wasn't it at the Akeda?
In the Akeda. When he was on the altar, the angels cried and the tears entered his eyes and this blinded him. Okay. Now, obviously, it's not just on the physical level. Right? What the Torah wants to tell us is that he did not see the fact that Esav has no hope anymore to join the Jewish nation. He still hoped that it will happen. While Rivka saw the picture as it was.
So that means he never saw Rivka.
Oh, that's why I'm saying it was not just physical blindness, right? Became also blind, we are told, by the fact that the wives of Esav burned offerings for idols and the smoke affected his eyes. Right? It doesn't mean he was totally blind, but he didn't have sharp vision. The Torah says, enough, not that he was blind. Okay? Meaning it was weaker.
As he got older, he
Right.
really became blind.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Said not to read back day the clothes of Esav, but Bogdav. I'm not. I did. What does Bog not to read back day the clothes, but Bogdav.
Okay. Let me explain something. When our sages say, don't read it Bgadav, read it Bogdav, it's not to nullify Bgadav. It's to say there is a dual meaning here. The Torah wants to hint towards something too. From the same root, there is another word, Bogdav, what means traitors.
It means what, traders?
Traitor, somebody who is disloyal.
Okay, traders. That I
Right.
didn't.
Not loyal. Right?
Right.
It's, you know,
Okay.
my. I'm sorry. Can you help? Okay. Anybody else?
Would you have thought that Yitzchak was naive on some level, or was it just because his
Not
desire to see
no.
Esav
He
become
was a
sad?
loving son. It's a complex story. If you want to go to the website and look at, you know, classes we had in the past, classes that discussed this, the blessings more in depth and more in details. That's why I did it more general today. It was not naivety, it was a desire of a father to still draw his son into the right direction, and he hoped it's still possible. While Rivka saw beyond and felt it's not. And there was a reason why Hashem enabled it to happen. Because if Hashem wanted Yitzchak to bless Yaakov with the blessings that he wanted to give Esav, why did it have to go in such a strange way? He could open up the eyes of Yitzchak to see that Esav is hopeless. Right? But by the fact that Yaakov was blessed while dressed like Esav, meaning Yitzchak thought he's blessing Esav, but it was Yaakov. This enabled Jewish people in future generations, all of us when we are not what we are supposed to be included of the blessings of Yitzchak.
Oh,
Meaning
wow.
when our external is Esav, we still have the Jewish spark inside. They are still including in the blessings, and that's why Hashem wanted it to be in this way.
Okay, and one other thing. You said that when he had the episode with the soup, that's how they called him Edom. Although when he came out, he was called Admoni and that he was red already. But that had no influence on the name that they referred to him as.
But then he was called the son because there was something else that stuck when he was born. That he was very hairy, like an older child, like Asui is
But he
like
was formed
old,
already.
right? So it's two aspects that show the same, that show the same. Meaning he did not want to grow further. Wanted maybe, but was not successful in it because his desires were so strong. So all his life he was full of regret. He tried, he failed, he tried again a while after, right? But didn't put enough effort in refining his character traits, and that's why he did not succeed.
So he had more potential for greatness than Yaakov.
If he would have done the right thing, he would have been even greater than Yaakov because his job was harder.
It's like the stacks were against him, you know?
We cannot, on the other hand, right, on the other hand, if Yaakov, who was with good character traits, would have been complacent, what is very easy to become if you're better than so many others, right?
Right, true.
It would have been much less than Esav, right? But Yaakov did the utmost that he could with what Hashem gave him. But the job of Esav was even harder. So there was
Thank you so
potential in
much.
Esav to be even greater than Yaakov.
So eye-opening.
What blessing did Isaac gave Esav. That we don't get into, right?
Okay. He intended to give him a physical blessing in physical blessings in order to encourage him to use it for the service of Hashem. And that's why he tells Yaakov, and he thinks he's Esav, Ve'iten lecha Elokim, Hashem should give you from the dew of the heavens and thorns and so on. Meaning it should depend on how much you serve Hashem.
Right.
Later on, he gave him blessings without connecting it to Hashem. Okay, if you'll see later on, when he still gave him still a blessing, it was not the original. It says already, you will not be part of the Jewish nation. But as a father, I'm giving you some blessings. Okay, we'll finish here.
Thank you.
Well, have a very good week.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Call to.